Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace, hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Hi, and welcome to this episode of the podcast FemTech at Work with today's very special guest from Singapore, Joshua Yim, who is the co-founder of NAFO. Am I pronouncing that correctly, NAFO?
Yes, Maaike, that's correct. It's an absolute pleasure to join you.
I'm very excited because Joshua is wearing multiple hats, and you have a very interesting background, including being a biostatistician on organ transplants. So maybe let's just start by you telling us a little bit about your background.
First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. Really honored to be here just to share a little bit. So I actually started out as a financial modeler and valuations. I did that at Ernst & Young.
Oh, okay.
So after that, I actually, very, very rich experience so far starting off. No relation to healthcare. After that, I was actually a data science analyst at StarHub, StarHub Corporations in Singapore. And that's a telecom company here.
Yeah.
But I knew that I always wanted to be in healthcare. Ever since I knew that from my final year, the synergy between mathematics and medical that could be combined. And I knew that that was the moment that I was always hoping that one day I'll get in. And that was the opportunity that I got with SingHealth here in Singapore. So I am now a biostatistician in organ transplant with them.
Okay, before we continue, what is a biostatistician? What do you do?
So a biostatistician, actually, we use, in plain English, mathematics and statistics to come up with some insights from the medical data, the EMR, the EHR data that we can get from our patients. I call it a very umbrella term because there are biostatisticians that deal more specifically with statistical modeling. Other biostatisticians do more advanced techniques like AI and ML as well. So really, I think that this biostatistician term should be updated over time.
So what do you use this data for? To determine the suitability of an organ for a patient, or whether a patient is suitable to receive a certain organ in a transplant? How is it applied in the day-to-day use of organ transplantation?
I think for myself, in Singapore, we see that other bigger countries with greater supply of organs, they are able to do a much more comprehensive analysis post-transplant. So in Singapore, we are building the foundations towards that sort of analysis as well. So for instance, there are post-transplant events like survivability, or graft rejection, or delayed graft function. These are matters that we actually take retrospectively. So we see the outcomes and we retrospectively look back at the data, and we can see if we can do some survival analysis from there.
Wow. Super interesting. But it gets better, because then somewhere along the line, you and your co-founder and your team decided to start NAFO and focus on fetal health screening.
Yeah, that's right. Just to give a little bit of background of NAFO, really proud of what we have right now. I myself built the foundations of NAFO. I built half of the solution about 3 years ago. And after 3 years, I looked back at the problem, just randomly looking back at my repositories and portfolios. I realized that the problem isn't solved in the way that I want to do it. And I told myself that, well, no better opportunity to really go into it. And so I was cold calling software developers, and I found my co-founder early in the year, and we've been working at it together. And you're very optimistic to say there's a team, but realistically, there's just two of us. But I can definitely share about some of the few developments that we've had.
But two people is a team, no?
Two people is still a team. We would love to expand the team a lot more than that, for sure.
Yeah, understand. But tell me, you started doing some work, as you call it, on fetal health screening. Why did you choose this area and not something different?
I think when we look at the total funding in research for just healthcare in the world, I think we realize that only 1% of it is in women's health. And there's never really been a large pool of resources that actually is dedicated to actual women's health. And we were looking around specifically what areas can it be. And we realized that obstetrics is quite an interesting area where not much research has been done. There have been a lot of papers, but we don't see a lot of products actually coming out, which is a very strange thing. My opinion on this is that I feel that the world is shifting their mindset towards longevity. So longevity is the key in healthcare these days, whereas obstetrics is new life. So I feel that suddenly the world has now shifted their resources towards a different area. But I think that's an opportunity where if you want to have longevity, you need to start right. And I think in the work that we do, that we aim to do in obstetrics, I think this is really the starting point.
Amazing. So what does your technology do?
So basically, if I can introduce, we're using a data endpoint called cardiotocography, which is essentially fetal heart rates and uterine contractions. It is a data endpoint that we believe is underused and underappreciated. If I'm not mistaken, the WHO has not changed their perception of ETG from 2016, and they deem it as insignificant to diagnose risk for high-risk pregnancies, which I respect the WHO, and there are a lot of institutions in obstetrics and gynecology that have similar opinions. However, we feel that coupled with the physiology of the mother and the fetus changing over time during the gestation period in third trimester, as well as numerous papers that have been published over just the past 3 years, especially Google DeepMind, they published a paper in March where they were actually suggesting very similar clinical workflow changes that we are trying to do as well. So these two combined, we find that there is real proof and real evidence towards doing that. So essentially, what does NAVAL do? NAVAL integrates CTG data that we can get from the existing machines. And without putting like a real buzzword over here, it's AI powered. So there is a reason why we purposely use AI towards this. Historically, there is an algorithm called the Dawes-Redman. So Dawes-Redman was developed in the 1980s. And we find that it is a computerized algorithm that follows strict rules that I think does not look into the intrinsic relationships between the pieces of information, which is essentially what AI and in extension mathematics does. So we find that with our test results that we have here, I think we're actually pretty confident that from here, this is the bread and butter of it, right? Just the classification and then probably providing a risk score. What we do next is that we actually provide context. And how do we do that? We actually have a report which tells physicians or clinical staff how the model actually came to that health classification, because we believe that there are too many black box situations and solutions in the world right now. And in healthcare, we find this to be a really big problem. So we really want to open the box and let the users know how it actually gets to that point. And we add a second layer where is that based on like the most influential pieces of information, we actually have a large language model to then argue against our first classification model. Is the decision-making process following guidelines? Is it following research papers? So that's the second layer that we actually add.
Wow, that's incredible. Let me just start off by thanking you, because we need people like you who are obviously extremely smart and thinking against the stream to help solve for women's health problems. As you rightfully pointed out, there is already very little research. And then if we all just accept the research for what it is, you know, we're never going to really make change. So thank you for everything that you do
to try and even be a contrarian to some of the existing research that is already out there. And also great to hear, by the way, about the use of AI, because I do agree with you that it's an incredible buzzword, but I do see the incredible benefits of using it for use cases like you are trying to solve now. So when we come back to actually the mother and the baby, with all the calculations and all the assessments and the screening that you do, what health complications would NAFO be able to detect early? And how does that change the potential outcome for the mother and the child, I guess?
Historically, CTG was always used for high-risk pregnancies, and a lot later in the third trimester. Traditionally, it's using during labor. We want to really find a new status quo that with NAFO, we can use CTG throughout the whole third trimester, and we can actually detect complications like hypoxic cases or cerebral palsy that can happen. And right now, we don't have all the data to specifically identify each complication. We define ourselves as the real big step before the fetuses are to even fall into these danger zones. That is what we really are aiming for. If I may quote some numbers, actually, there is a prevalence in 2024, 11 million births in the world actually fall into these couple 4 or 5 complications that we talked about. So low Apgar scores, fetal acidosia, cerebral palsy as well, and really these hypoxic cases, which in layman terms, it means that the fetus is not getting enough oxygen, and these are resulting in either stillbirths or there's trauma to the fetus's head, or there can be reduced growth over time, which is then comes back down to the longevity problem that the world is trying to solve. So that's the really scary part. But here's something like people don't really understand, where actually 28 million of births are actually just teetering on the gray area,
yeah,
whether or not they're going to fall into that danger zone. And that really is that 28 million that we are trying to detect much earlier on. Because I think when acute and chronic complications happen, it's a very stressful moment, and there's only so much that the clinical team can really intervene. And so we want to cause less stress to clinical teams and also the expecting mothers, because we know that stress actually adds on to maternal stress and it adds down to fetal stress. So those are kind of the situations we really want to solve.
Amazing. You mentioned that you've been working on this for 3 years. So how did you get your data? Because obviously you need to get these data from pregnant women, right? So have you been collaborating with anybody in this process?
No. So funny enough, Micah, this is where it gets a little hilarious. 3 years ago, when I was actually just coming out of university, I wanted to have a healthcare project to fit into my portfolio. Not a very noble cause, but that's when I actually found this open data set on CTG data. And so that was kind of the project and the solution that I was working on. And actually, I never knew that this would be then the foundations of when 3 years later, when I look at it again, I actually see that, wow, this is still very relevant. Let's really build on this. And that's how we've really gotten such traction that I'll explain a little bit later.
Ah, okay.
But now we really have a full-fledged solution with a POC that we can demo and we can show to institutions. And one of the milestones that we've reached so far is that 2 weeks ago, we actually had a conversation with one of the public hospitals here in Singapore, and they're part of a healthcare cluster. I had a 25-minute discussion with the senior obstetrician, and he says, okay, let's do it. Let's do clinical trials. And he's going to loop in another hospital as well. And we're really, really excited because usually in the startup scene, you have to define your customers, you have to define all these canvases before you really go into it. But we've really kind of just fast-tracked our way. And now we need to go back in time to go to investors because we found the customer first. And then now we need to create all these slides to show investors that, yeah, we know what we're doing. But that's kind of like answering the point where, have we got any traction? Have we got any collaborations? There's one more private hospital that we have here in Singapore. We're going to be going into discussions for POCs in Q4. So this is all really, really fascinating. And this is also before the company is even going to be registered.
Very exciting.
Yeah, the company is not even registered yet. It's going to be registered this month. And this is some real great energy that we're having here.
Why do you think the feedback from clinicians and doctors has been so positive so far?
Oh, I think definitely because historically, all of the kind of assessments on CTG have always been in labor. And now that we are trying to present a solution that doesn't just specifically look at labor, because there are many ways that you can do that. There are many ways that you can diagnose complications. But if there is now a new way to even provide safer birthing journeys throughout the whole third trimester, then that's a new area of innovation that we have not seen before.
So it sounds like obviously these clinicians, doctors, hospitals are very keen. As you rightfully said, you need to do clinical trials, you need to do a proof of concept, lots of things that you need to do, and you're not even incorporated. So it seems everything is very smooth sailing. So I'm kind of a little bit hesitant to ask, like, have you also encountered any challenges so far?
No, of course, for sure. I think when I was first starting out, so I built the math and science behind it from January to May this year. In February, I was already contacting people to try and form a team. There were about six of us at that point in time. And very quickly, actually, five people dropped off, like within 3 weeks. There were just changes in life and they had their own priorities that were going on. And even my current co-founder, we were still in kind of like not in contact until late May. So very much in that limbo situation from January to May, I was still very much on my own. And I think what really pushed me was kind of just knowing that it kind of works. And then when the kind of works turns into it really works, and then the really works becomes a really physical and tangible POC, I think that's really kind of the amazing journey that we have. But no, I think for a lot of starting entrepreneurs and solopreneurs, finding your team can be really difficult, especially in this field in medtech. I guess without saying the obvious one would be funding. I'll touch very little on funding because I think that we are positioning ourselves really well and we have that confidence that we can go on. But obviously, one of the issues is that we are bootstrapping right now. Everything that we have built is under $100 Singapore, which is actually pretty insane. But we know that, of course, to scale, there's going to be that conversation of funding that we need to have with ventures, or whether it be with accelerators or different institutions that we engage. I think the third barrier of entry, or the third problem that we've had so far, is that while it may not be spoken too much and while people may not see it at all, is that both my co-founder and I, we're not doctors and we are not PhD holders. And sometimes, especially in the medtech area, there is a lot of reliance and a lot of, they need to see the strength of the team. And so then face value is very important. In the early stages, we've had a lot of pushback in terms like, you have a principal investigator, are you ready? Do you understand the situation at hand? And instead of taking it as like kind of a full stop, I think we took that as an opportunity. And now we have really educated ourselves in the space and what really is the roadmap needed, the kind of regulatory and compliance that we need, who do we need to onboard? And just on the ground, like medically, when we can talk to physicians toe to toe about the problems that we're facing, speaking in their language, providing the validation that we can, that really has helped us a lot.
Yeah, it resonates so much with what you say. I have by far not even the background that you have, but I don't have any medical background. But I do think that diversity of thought is so important to kind of make change. And it's such an accolade to you that you can actually speak to clinicians even without having a medical degree, but can really understand some of the key challenges that they have and have their support in trying to solve them. Are you also applying for any government grants? So is kind of the Singapore government a good partner for you to help grow your company going forward?
Yeah, I think we can definitely see in the past 4 or 5 years, the Singapore government has been very supportive, especially new founders when they're starting off. And especially in areas in new tech and deep tech, definitely solutions that can provide the benefit towards the rest of the country. They're very supportive. There are many institutions, there are a couple to name, and that could be a different conversation, but it can range from government bodies to research institutions. It can also be from private companies as well, like the cloud computing companies who also want to provide accelerator programs for these medtech startups to really start it off, right? So many players in the game in different industries, but all trying to really come to that main goal. So yeah, Singapore has been a really great starting point. You know, funny enough, I was also listening to a few of your podcasts, and I think Naval really sits very nicely in between. There was Inti Labs, Eric came on board, and then there was Satya from OV Health.
Yeah.
It's really nice that we're having this ecosystem in Asia for Inti Labs in Taiwan. We are here in Naval in Singapore. OV Health is also in Singapore and then in Indonesia. But I say it in that order because from IVF to gestation periods and then ongoing health for mothers, this is really a nice ecosystem that we're really building the roadmap towards securing better healthcare quality for women out there. So really happy to be part of this environment.
Yeah. So for me, what is great by doing these podcasts that I can also connect the dots. I firstly see where the gaps are, but I also see how people are trying to solve them. So I also want to make a shout out to PregnaSense. So have a listen to the episode from PregnaSense, which is Dr. Leona Poon. And she has done a lot of research on preeclampsia and how to avoid preeclampsia in pregnant women, as well as developing tools to support women beyond their pregnancy, because we know now that some of the complications they may have had during pregnancy affect their health later on. So it's so exciting. And it's also great because I love bringing you guys together to see if together you can have a better impact. We can talk about that later. Back to you. I agree with you. Singapore has an amazing ecosystem. There's a lot of fantastic organizations that are really helping biotech, medtech, and femtech grow, but not just for Singapore, but also to expand into the region. I know it's super early, but your vision for Naval, I mean, what would it look like? Where would you hope to see the company in 5-10 years' time?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think for a great question for new founders, I believe that if the founders have never thought of this point, maybe they shouldn't start. That's very critical. But I would say that even for myself, let's probably backtrack a little bit and why I believe Naval was so important for me personally. I believe that Southeast Asia in particular. So originally, I'm actually from Malaysia and I'm here working in Singapore. And we know that Singapore has great healthcare systems, but we know that that's not the full story when it comes to the whole of Southeast Asia. We know that mortality rates on the fetal and the neonatal side are a lot worse than we believe. So really the passion behind Naval is to provide that service and to help communities that really need this information and these context building towards creating the next more informed clinical steps. Let's say 5 years. So within 5 years, we would hope that we would have already expanded to Southeast Asia. We understand that HSA clearance is going to be there when it comes to licensing the product. By the second year, we really hope that we are going to be starting to expand beyond Singapore and going to probably the governments of these other Southeast Asian countries and really pitching to them that this is more than just having a nice name to the institution. This is really about sustaining the developments of our countries here in Southeast Asia and really to grow Southeast Asia together as a whole. That really is the goal. So 10 years, maybe even realistically a stretch for me, but I'll say that within 5 years, we really want to get out there to Southeast Asia.
Amazing. That's very incredible. So one of the big questions that always sits on my mind, particularly when a mathematician or scientist kind of move into a commercial space, at the end of the day, you are also going to have to think about how you price this product, right? How are you looking to commercialize this? So this would be B2B2C, right? Eventually. Have you thought about that yet? Or are you just doing your proof of concept first and then looking at that next?
Actually, right now, what we envision Naval to be is a B2B software as a medical device company. Actually, to really have a greater vision, we really hope that we could be fetal monitoring, open AI, but fetal monitoring. That's really where we see ourselves because we understand that even with the gold standard platform, with a great service design, with great UI UX, we know that not every healthcare institution will be allowed to leave their intranet, will not be allowed to leave their IT ecosystem. And so where do we see ourselves from there? And that's where we see that we're going to package our models and so that these healthcare institutions will be able to access them through APIs, and then they can replicate the accuracy and precision that we have. And we'll be there to also guide them if they also want to build their platform on top of ours to make sure that it's compatible. So I believe that the B2B to C space, that's a little tricky because we see a lot of success. I mean, we have PeriGen in the US, we have Melody International who has gotten their FDA in Thailand, and we have BioRhythm here who has done their work in Singapore as well.
Yep.
I think what we see is that one, it is already a very packed market to really enter. A lot of players are really coming into this, and it's also not just with CTG, it's with ultrasound scans as well. The second one being why we are not as keen to go into that B2B to C area is because we want to make sure that we are empowering physicians instead of giving solutions that at home may give some trigger points, but when they go to the clinics or to the hospitals, what if the doctors really tell them that, oh, actually, it's a false alarm? I think we want to really not give this gray area of deciding, oh, does it work? Does it not work? And so, I mean, especially for an early firm like us, where we know that our expertise is in engineering and in software building and in AI work, we want to really harness this energy and this talent to do what will be best for us. So that's right to say that we are more of a B2B site.
Yeah, understood. Hey, you know, we spoke briefly about AI, but AI is unavoidable to be a topic these days. You already mentioned that the power of AI for you, just even being able to validate some of the data that you use. But how do you see the role of AI kind of evolve in prenatal health and diagnostics going forward? It's a big question. We could do a whole podcast on this, I think, but very curious to see how you're thinking about this.
No, this is a great question, Micah. First of all, thank you for asking that. It's really on the minds of so many medical staff, not only in fetal monitoring, but just everywhere else, right? I think the buzzword for today will be agentic AI. Everybody wants to see how agentic AI can come into the picture. And there's actually a school of thought. It's not a real school of thought, but I think that it's pretty interesting. And I got this from a fellow friend in the scene as well. He mentions that, is your workflow or output deterministic, or is it very abstract? I feel like if your workflow is already very deterministic, we feel that agentic AI may not be the full use or the full potential being able to derive from that kind of architecture. Whereas if it was agentic AI, we feel that if the work is very abstract, kind of like, let's say I need to, like, regardless of whatever corpus or knowledge base that is being trained on, I need the agent to find out all of the possible solutions in Asia for this precise situation. But if we already have something that we know the clinicians are very focused on, and that is their workflow, I feel like a very deterministic AI automation workflow and an architecture will be more beneficial. Again, because agentic AI is much more expensive and a lot more guardrails to implement, because when they start crawling the web and you don't know what's going on, that's an even darker black box to penetrate. I think with Naval and what we see in fetal monitoring, we believe that deterministic workflows are going to be the key, because again, what Naval really aims to do is that we want to provide informed context building for our physicians to really make that next clinical step. We do not want to take away autonomous decision-making processes from our obstetricians on the ground. We really want to empower them instead of removing them. I think this really is the key that we're looking at. But again, I mean, we don't say no to agentic AI workflows. I think that will be good into helping automate the process, but we will not hope to use agentic AI to have free roam of the solutions that we have. That's how we see it.
Wow. Yes. Super interesting. There's so much to learn and so much to understand about this. Maybe just let's talk a little bit about your personal experience and life. Are you enjoying the journey of being a founder? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it?
Well, I think, first of all, just for transparency, I'm a very young founder. 3 years ago, I mentioned, was when I just came out of universities. I'm putting myself against a lot of heavyweights in the market right now. And while it's not a point of intimidation, but I think it's more of an area of consciousness and mindfulness of how to go about these next few months. What I really enjoy about it is that in training, my training was in statistics and an extension, machine learning and artificial intelligence. But then with my experience over time, my working experience, I've gotten into financial products. I've gotten into product development with telecom and with back at EY. And here in Singapore now, I've really come together in healthcare. So I think all these mixed together has really been good experiences that now when I come into this founder / CEO role, it kind of gives me not an edge, but a very little head start of like, how can I see everything from a bird's eye view? I mean, with that in mind, I mean, I still have no idea of everything in the world. I don't have all the knowledge. And being a young founder, this is really exciting, a great process to learn. So I really enjoy the learning process of everything. It's been really fun in that sense. I think what I don't like about it, there have been for sure many times that you don't know when you stop working. I think that you have to work after work. And eventually when this really goes full time, then that's when the focus can be there. And then just dealing with the uncertainty as a young founder coming into this, the stress alone and the anxiety is enough to probably break a lot of people. But I think that with a great resolve, with a great fortitude in ourselves, I have this passion and I have the vision of really redefining how we can do fetal monitoring. And not really just from a medical point of view, really also just from the service design. Again, mentioning service design because we really want to make sure that we really at every step, it is that intuitive process, regardless of who is going to be using it, whether it be the midwives, the nurses, the doctors, we really want to make sure it is that seamless of a process to understand and to interpret CTD traces. So again, just a real combination of experiences, really making the young founder journey exciting, but scary.
Well, I think you're doing a great job. So it took me like 25 years of corporate life experience to find my passion and to figure out that this is what I wanted to do. And the fact that you already have had multiple different work experience in different areas and are now already on the path of setting up a very successful startup, I think you're doing an amazing job. Also note that most of the founders, as you probably heard on the podcast before, they talk about switching off and taking care of their mental health. I think a good self-care routine and building kind of those pauses in is also super important for a founder. I'm very sorry, but we're at the end of the podcast. It's been an incredible conversation. So maybe I can just ask you one final question. And that is, what are you most excited about?
I think if I just want to say it in one line, very quickly, nothing really about obstetrics or naval or anything of the startup scene. My one line would be the world functions by making money, but I'm really excited about doing something bigger than the money itself. That's really my mic drop moment there, Micah.
That's beautiful because I'm pretty sure that you can do both. So you can have a massive impact and still make money on the side. But I love the idea that at least you're thinking about this. Thank you so much, Joshua Yim, for being on my podcast today. It's been absolutely inspirational. And I wish you all the best of luck. And I really hope that I can get back to you in some time to bring you back on the podcast to see how the progress is going. See with how many other kind of podcast guests you have connected for collaboration. But in the meantime, I will share your information and about the company on the show notes of this podcast. And for all of you that have listened and enjoyed the conversation with Joshua, like me, please like and share so we can give founders like Joshua the exposure they deserve. Thank you, Joshua. Have a great day, and I look forward to speaking again to you soon. And all the best of luck with all your proof of concepts.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Micah. Thank you so much for this.